take a few, over 100 disciples on this list, Prabhupada's disciples, that wanted to speak. That's not how many were there. There were thousands there, and there were more than 100 Prabhupada disciples there, but there were over 100 that wanted to speak, and there was 2 hours, 120 minutes for 100 disciples, and everyone was supposed to be limited to 2 minutes. So the math didn't work out very well. And, of course, it started out with Gopal Krishna Maharaj speaking for half an hour. And then they had a local, you know, Goswami Shastriji spoke for 20 minutes. So there was like 50 minutes gone. So now we had like an hour and 10 minutes left for 100 devotees. And since I was the MC, I started out by saying how difficult, you know, this service was, and is what I understood, is that Prabhupada created this society with, he had a movement of preachers, you know, and that's what we do, we talk and we talk and we talk, you know. So trying to limit anyone as soon as they're sitting down and they start talking Krishna Katha and Prabhupada Katha is almost, it's impossible. But we all survived that day, but it was very wonderful. But I think maybe that was one of the reasons I thought I'll stay here in New Dwarka and it'd be a very nice atmosphere. And as I said, upstairs, this was, you know, one of my favorite places to be with Srila Prabhupada. And it's still just such a wonderful place with so many wonderful devotees. We moved it down here just to hopefully make it easier for everyone and to facilitate cameras. That's why I'm sitting here. I'd be very happy to just sit with everyone. In fact, everyone, please get as close, and make this as personal, as intimate as possible. This morning was a very wonderful program, and this is always such a it's a very difficult day. Prabhupada, of course, when he spoke like about his spiritual master's disappearance, and he would say appearance, disappearance, all the same, but that's a very elevated level, and I know I'm not anywhere near that level, so disappearance is just heartache, you know. It's always heartache because we... for me, at least, Prabhupada's personal presence was so much required for me. And I, you know, when people say, you know, I was this, I was that, so fortunate, I say, well, I needed that much. So Prabhupada gave me that much personal association because I required it. So he always gave everyone, you know, that's what they say, Krishna gives you what you need. So the only thing I can think is how much I really needed Prabhupada around. So sticking with New Dwarka and what we were doing upstairs, does anyone, before we go further, anyone have any questions about it? Prabhupada's quarters here? Everything about them, even just going up the stairs, the experience everywhere involves Prabhupada's quarters. There was always lessons. He always was teaching us, you know, every moment. We also have a nice personal treat for everyone. I'll give you some Prabhupada's blessings. Some of his paraphernalia that he gave to me, his chatter. And many of you have heard the story, but I can repeat it just to make it that much more inviting to get Prabhupada's blessings on your head from his chatter, which he had with him for about 7 years, and I got it in 1975, so it's very special. Chatter that went around the world many, many times on Prabhupada's shoulders. So were there any more remaining questions from upstairs? Okay. So as I said, even the stairway, things were a little different. When you walk through that door there, the stairway was open. Now there's a wall there. But it was open, and when Prabhupada would ascend or descend the steps, we would always be right along the railing, you know, all those little, his bhaktas, just gazing at Prabhupada, just so excited and seeing him. And Prabhupada was always very excited to see his disciples. He loved his disciples very much, you know. I'm saying was, of course we mean he does, but while he was with us, he showed so much. He just loved being around his little exuberant, innocent disciples who just wanted to give their entire lives to him. And I told you the very first time I was with Prabhupada was May of 72, and I wasn't even his servant yet, but I was in the gardens reading Krishna book every day, every afternoon. Somehow or other, I was given that service, and it was, you know, very enjoyable service. And Prabhupada loved hearing from Krishna book. He would read it himself, and he would have it read to him. In both situations, he was just ecstatic listening to stories about Krishna, Balaram, and the cowherd boys. And Prabhupada was right there. And it was the first time, two times, Prabhupada said to me, but it was during Krishna book reading in his garden right here. Where is it now? Right behind there anyway. I don't know where I am. Over there. Back there, yeah. In his garden over there. And I was reading the story, and when I stopped at one moment, and he just looked at us, and looked at us, meant there was just six or seven devotees in the garden. It was a very small place, so there would just be a small group there. And he just looked at us and said, "I like the cowherd boys very much." And we would just all, you know, become wide-eyed. Prabhupada often become wide-eyed, you know. Prabhupada was so expressive. But he said he liked the cowherd boys very much. And then, you know, I got to go on the morning walk. And I was always, like I am now, just a nobody that somehow or other got a lot of mercy from Srila Prabhupada. You know, I wasn't a book distributor. I wasn't a temple manager. Obviously wasn't anything above that, GBC, sannyasi, nothing. But there I was on the morning walk while we were here in L.A. for a week. And in the garden every day, because I was with Kirtanananda, so that was, he got me into all these things. So, but I was just very young, at that time 20 years old, brahmacharya, he'd just given me my Brahmin thread. But the one day he was walking up the stairs, and, you know, we're all there, Karunder, Kirtananda, myself, Kaladri, like six of us, and he's walking up and he just looked at me, and he said, "Oh, Suta Goswami." And then he just kept walking up the steps because I was reading Krishna book. So that became, for the day, or for that moment, he called me different names at different times. Like I said, upstairs, he called me Shruti Kirti Maharaj, which he definitely said that with a smile. And so this time he looked at me and he said, "Suta Goswami." I didn't even know who Suta Goswami was in 1972. I wasn't very aware of it. But I figured it was a good thing. And then, you know, another morning he's walking up those stairs. So 1972, man, he was 76 years old. And he looked at us, all, you know, anywhere from 18 to 22, tops 24. And he looked at us and we're all just there. And he said, "I used to run up these stairs," not meaning these particular stairs, but "I used to run up the stairs," he said. He said, "but now I can't." And then he said, "the desire hasn't changed." He said, "I still want to run up the stairs." He said, "but this body has changed." So like the simplest thing, he'd give you instructions. He was always giving us instructions, you know, whether it came through humor, however it came, you could understand. He's teaching. He's always teaching us. So it wasn't just when he was sitting on the Vyasasang giving class. There was so many. And he would say something so simple, it was very profound. It was a very profound statement. And I'll never forget that. I was just walking down the stairs now, and I was thinking, you know, like then, I certainly could have ran up and down. Now I'm not running too much. And I thought Prabhupada was, at that time, he was 14 years older than I am now. But he was running all around the world. You know, right? Nihari knows we... You know, all of us, Jai Gauranga, if you went on a morning walk with Prabhupada, you had to be prepared because it wasn't a walk in the park. Even if it was a walk in the park, Prabhupada was zoom, you know. he was going. And, you know, I know devotees who look for excuses not to go on the morning walk because, you know, if you're sleeping 5-6 hours at night and you're up at 4 in the morning, and that morning walk was, it was very difficult for Prabhupada. And he had that cane, and I still always try to figure out what was the use of the cane, because sometimes he would use it, other times it was just flailing around. One time it would be in his left hand, another time it would be in his right hand. Yes, it was for the dogs, right? And for us, to poke us and point. He would point with the cane, you know. Who was it? Vishal was saying today, you know, Prabhupada, when he pointed, he'd point with his cane. You nonsense, you know, you rascal. You this. So he'd use his cane. It was a good pointing device. And I'm sure sometimes it got used, but it would always went with him. And Prabhupada, as I, you know, my people always say your favorite, what did you like most about Prabhupada? Of course, you could say everything. You know, that's the easy answer, is everything. Everything was wonderful, you know. Everything was perfect. But, of course, there is always the more perfect and most perfect and most, for me, the most delightful was Prabhupada's sense of humor, because I liked that smiling and laughing, and which we know, you know, in our years, that isn't what was always taught in Krishna consciousness. That it was we heard it was a joyful process, but it was also a very austere process. Jai Shri Shri Gaur Nitai, Shri Shri Rukmini Dwar Kadish, Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Ki Jai. And where was I? So yes, Srila Prabhupada's sense of humor. So it would come, and sometimes, which was very, very nice, is when, you know, you were in on his joke and others weren't necessarily in on it. So it was something he would share with those who happened to know what was going on. And one of my favorite ones here in New Dwarka, which he did a few times, it was the Gayatri Mantra joke, you know. Because every morning walk, before Prabhupada went on the walk, it was his routine. Prabhupada was very regulated, had his routine. So in the morning, he, you know, brushed his teeth with his twig and washed up, got ready, sat down, put on his tilak, and then would sit in his seat upstairs, you see, in the sitting room, and he would chant. You know, and he'd always sit very straight, and he would chant Gayatri Mantra. So sometimes people were able to get up there in advance and sit down in front of Prabhupada, watch him put on his tilak, and they'd just sit there. And then, of course, Prabhupada would sit up and he'd, you know, go and get his thread. So when, what do? You know, you're sitting there with Prabhupada, your guru, he's chanting Gayatri Mantra. So everybody, whatever Prabhupada does, we just did it. You know, we were like little imitations, you know, we just... So I never did. I never sat down and chanted Gayatri at that time because I knew better from experience. So Prabhupada grabs his thread and he'd be chanting, his eyes closed. And so then you'd have a few, you know, sannyasi, GBC, whatever they were, book distributor. So everybody, what could be better than chanting Gayatri Mantra? Well, Prabhupada was chanting Gayatri Mantra. So then somehow or other, Prabhupada would be done very quick. Now, so he would get up out of his seat, and everybody else is just looking, and they're like, because, you know, you can't stop, right? Once you start, you got your mantra. So by this time now, Prabhupada's got a little, he doesn't show his smile, but he's got a smile. And I'm like, you know, for me, it was just so much fun to see them squirm in front of Prabhupada. That was always the most fun, was seeing your godbrother squirm in front of Srila Prabhupada. That was... Because we squirmed a lot in front of Srila Prabhupada, so when it got passed to others, that was pleasure. That was real transcendental pleasure. So they'd be sitting there trying to finish, and Prabhupada was fast. Not just his walk. Everything he did was efficient and fast. So he would head towards the door. So I'm already standing at that door, this door upstairs, and I've got the cane in my hand. And he would grab, as he's walking, he grabs the cane. And then I had a shoehorn, an ivory shoehorn it was. Somebody gave him, it was a very beautiful shoehorn. And Prabhupada would take a step. I would have his shoes right at the door. And he would take a step into his shoe. And his next step didn't go in next to that foot. It went to the next. He was already walking as you put on his shoes. So you had to be very conscious of what you were doing. So he would step into the one shoe, and then he'd be walking, and then you had to slide the other. You know, he would put his foot into the shoe, and you'd have to slide. So he was already out the door, and, you know, they have to go on the walk with Prabhupada. So he never said anything, but you knew he was having fun, you know. And, of course, that was also, at least those things, was my fun as well. One of the other things he did... sometimes repeatedly, a few times, he had this very amazing sentence, or a few sentences, and I look for it in morning walk conversations, audios. I did find it once many years ago, and then I didn't write it down where it was and everything, so I lost it again. But he would talk about, especially here in New Dwarka, very often he talked about the scientists. You know, and of course, scientists, he never said anything very very positive. You know, just that they're post-dated checks and everything was perhaps, maybe, and they'd talk a bunch of nonsense. So then he had this sentence he would say, and it was double talk. Actually made no sense at all, but it sounded very, very intelligent. The syllables came out in such a way that they sounded like somebody was talking very high-level science things. And whenever he said it, it was the exact same. Prabhupada had this sentence memorized or whatever, but he would say it. So the whole point of him doing it, it was very funny, very, very funny joke, because he would say it, and as his disciples, is all anyone ever wanted to do was just shake their head in agreement, because Prabhupada said something, and what are you going to do? You're going to disagree with, you know. So everyone would look like, and of course, that was the point of the joke, was he just made everybody look like fools. So Prabhupada would say it, and then he would laugh, and of course, the first time I heard it, but then when it happened, you know, weeks later, a month later, we did it again. So then I was fortunate enough to be able to, like, laugh along. And then you just look at the expressions on everyone who doesn't have any idea what he's saying. But, like we say, damned if you don't know what Prabhupada's saying. So you do. So, like, everyone would try so hard to just catch all those syllables and then just, like, you know, shake their heads in agreement to nonsense, you know. Which was the point of the whole joke, was it's all nonsense. Prabhupada would say, it's all nonsense. So Prabhupada was very, you know, he was very clever, very funny. This is as long as the humor. The one time in Mayapur, at the Lotus Building, you know, Prabhupada would walk down the stairs from his room. There was a nice long stairs. And he was very aware of, Prabhupada always knew everything, knew who was on the walk, knew who wasn't on the walk. And you better be on the walk if you were one of his devotees in training, you know, sannyasi, a leader, GBC, whatever it was. You better be on that walk, or his servant, his secretary, everybody in his party. You always had to be at class, and you always had to be on the morning walk. There was no question. I learned that very early on. I never, ever, 2.5 years, never missed a class of Prabhupada's. It's just not possible. Even I had malaria. I'm passing out in front of him. I was still sitting in front of him at the class, because that's what you were supposed to do. That was the mercy Prabhupada was giving you. So as he's walking down the stairs, and he gets to the bottom of the stairs and then starts walking along the path, and he asked where one of the sannyasis were. And, you know, everybody, you know, just kind of looked at each other, and someone said, oh, he's not feeling well, Prabhupada. And of course, this was like 6 o'clock in the morning, 6:30 in the morning. And I'm right next to Prabhupada holding the microphone, and I saw Prabhupada's expression when he heard he's not feeling well, and Prabhupada kind of went, You know, Prabhupada didn't buy this. And I'm next to him, and I said, yes, Prabhupada, I said he has morning sickness. And Prabhupada laughed and laughed, and he said, yes, he said, that is the difficulty, you know. Which was a cute expression, morning sickness is, you know, here we apply that to women who were pregnant. So saying that about a sannyasi, kind of, it had a morning sickness because he was sleeping. It was obvious he was sleeping. And Prabhupada said, yes, that's the problem, he said. And then he looked at us and he said, yes, he said, if one doesn't go to the morning program, he said, no breakfast. He said, that will cure it. He said, no morning program, no breakfast. He said, everyone will be at the morning program. So it was very practical and serious, Prabhupada was. But also, the humor was there. So here in New Dwarka, for those of you who were upstairs, we didn't go down. You have the three doors all together, then there's the hallway. So the first door on the left, that was Prabhupada's bathroom, very traditional, typical, had a bathtub, toilet, sink, small. And like everywhere in Prabhupada's bathroom, you know, and in the West, in America, Europe, well, America especially, we always had the showers, you know, shower curtain, bathtub was there. But in Prabhupada's bathtub, there was always a bucket, because Prabhupada never, ever took a shower. He took a bucket bath. So you would just fill the bucket up with warm water, you know, correct temperature, like the warm water, and that's, Prabhupada would use one bucket of water to bathe, and sometimes maybe another bucket to rinse. Because imagine Prabhupada's massage, his whole body was covered in mustard oil every day, you know, noontime, that's what you did, you spread mustard oil on his entire body. So he was very golden. And of course you put the mustard oil on it, and you know, Prabhupada would be walking. It was just watching Prabhupada walk. Even he was so fascinating to see Prabhupada. Even you were with him forever. You know, you could be with him month after month after month. You just never tired. At least, you know, I still found it just so pleasurable to watch him walk. Because he had kind of a barefoot with the oil. He had kind of an interesting shuffle that he would do, you know, and he just had his gumsha on. And he would get up, he'd step, and he just would head to the bathroom. And so then you'd see on that tile floor upstairs, the white tile floor, very, very waxed. You look at it now, it's many coats of wax on the floor. And you could see his footprints, you know, all his footprints as he walked to the bathroom, because the last thing you massaged was Prabhupada's lotus feet. Very pink. They're pink. People ask you, they're definitely Prabhupada's. Bottoms of his feet were very pink. His skin was very soft. Jagaranga knows he was massaging his feet every day in the final month. And only fragrance from Prabhupada was wonderful. There was never anything that came from Prabhupada's body that was offensive in any way. No odor, no anything. It was just sweetness. Prabhupada was just sweetness. He smelled sweet and he looked sweet. And he would just stand up, just in a little gumption, and he would head to the bathroom. And there he would take his bucket bath. And generally once, you know, we were going to India, which by 72 we were traveling to India. So we had sandalwood soap, which you saw in his case there. If you look closely, you'd see in a box of Mysore sandalwood soap. So that was like the number one soap. And we also used Chandrika, which was an Ayurvedic soap. Both of these are still available. You can get them in India, both of these soaps. So he would bathe with those and then just rinse off. And while he was doing that, when I was describing just about the cooker. So now the cooker was on the whole time you're massaging Srila Prabhupada. And you've already made the chapati dough before the massage. So that's sitting under, you know, a little stainless steel thing, keeping it nice. So now when Prabhupada headed to the bathroom, just try to imagine, he headed to the bathroom. So you had 15 minutes, more or less. And in those 15 minutes, you laid his clothing on his bed, kopan, two pieces. Then his dhoti, laid that across. Then you put his kurta next to that, and you folded nicely, and button bottom two buttons, because his head would fit through, and that was two less buttons to button. So this is serving how you think. This is how I thought. This is like I say, you're a pujari, personal servant to a pure devotee. You're a pujari. But he was always moving, as he said. You know, you couldn't just sit in one place. He didn't stay still for you. And he also would tell you if you made something wrong. You know, you didn't have to wonder, like, Rukmini Dwarkadish, I hope that doll is good. Prabhupada would tell you. He said, it's doll. He said, it's like mud. That was his, when it wasn't good, it was like mud. It was always like mud. I cooked mud a couple times. And so you had 15 minutes, so you put his latest clothes out. Then you walked over to his desk, and he had a tilak set up, which was all silver. So there was a mirror, a compact. This was given to him by Garga Muni back 1970-ish. So it was opened it up and had the mirror on both sides, and the top of it had carved ivory. It was ivory, and it was carved. And then there was a small bowl, like katuri, was also silver, sterling silver. That you would have a ball of chandan. You know, it wouldn't necessarily start out like a ball. It wouldn't, you know, like pieces of chandan are always, you know, broken. But Prabhupada would always make it into a ball. So he would rub the edges. Each day he would work on the different edges until ultimately you have like a golf ball sized piece of chandan. So he made it ball shaped, you know. So that was in a bowl. And then he had a tiny lota, which was also the size of a golf ball. And it had a lid and a little spoon. You know, figured, you know, the lota is that big and had a tiny spoon. So you would have to set all that up. So that means you would open the mirror so he didn't have to open the mirror. And you would have the lota with the little spoon. You'd lay it on top. You know, so the spoon was there, available, enough water in the lota, and just have the piece of chandan. So then you would run into the servants' quarters and take the cooker apart, and everything would be, all the vegetables, somehow or other, you had the flame at the right area, so they were okay, they weren't mush, you know, they were actually had a consistency to them. So you'd take all the vegetables out, put them aside, and you would take the container of rice with the lid on it and put that aside, and it made perfect rice, steam, you know, because you put just the right amount of water in it, and it would be perfect. And then you would take the lid, which was a small wok. It was this big around and like that deep, so it was like that. And you would take the lid and put it on this little two-burner stove that was on the floor in the room and make a chaunce. And you'd pour some of the chaunce into the dal. And sometimes you'd have a wet vegetable and you'd pour some of the chaunce into the wet vegetable. So this is what Prabhupada showed me the first few days how to do. The chaunce was whatever was around. And in those days, there wasn't a whole lot around. We had our cumin seed, our mustard seed. Of course, chili, and hing, turmeric, coriander, like that. So this was always basic chants. And then there would still be some in the wok. So now there's three things. You made one chants and three things are getting spiced by it. So then you would take some of the vegetables and you would just put them in the chants and kind of dry fry them. So that was a subji. Then you could make another subji. And then you would roll one chapati. So all this is what went on here and many other places, but here. And then somehow or other, you got all that done and you got his plates and you put all the subjis. And Prabhupada never liked too much on his plate. He didn't, you know, he said, you don't overwhelm, you know, you don't put a lot. And if you did, he would accuse you of wanting it for yourself. That was his. So he had a way of making you right away, you'd never do it again, because he'd say, you're just thinking of yourself, you know, what you're going to eat. So that was it. But anyway, so you just a little bit of each thing. The thing of rice was a good size. And then you just run into Prabhupada's room with the plate. And generally, Prabhupada was just in the middle of Gayatri, just finishing Gayatri, or he just finished Gayatri. And no talking. You'd come in, you'd put the plate down, he'd get up from his chair, go next to the bed where the table was facing the wall. He'd sit right on the floor, right on a straw mat. Wasn't a cushion mat, wasn't it? It was a straw mat. And sit down on the floor. And there would be one chapati there, and that was puffed up. Chapati must be puffed up. Otherwise, forget it. He never did it with me, but he's been known to throw cracker chapatis across at the person who gave it to him. He has been known to do that. But, you know, I guess Kirtanananda trained me nicely, and also Lord was kind. I brought him nice chapatis. And you just put a touch of ghee on the top, but you didn't break that bubble. So you just lay some ghee and you bring in, put it down. So then you put your plate down and you offered obeisances to him and you just ran out of the room because now you have to make another chapati. And, you know, Prabhupada would push down the chapati and that was like part of the, you know, the nectar, you know, it was puffed and Prabhupada break off a piece and he'd start with like bitter melon. If you had some bitter melon there available, he would have that. And then you're running out. So by the time you make the next chapati, bring it in, he's ready for it. And you just slide it onto his plate and offer obeisances and Prabhupada's pushing it down. And this was lunch. This was the whole, you know, 2 hours. This was like your 2 hours. It was the most important 2 hours the servant had in his every day was doing that. You know, morning walk was there, bell ringing. Bell rang a lot, but those 2 hours were very intense. And of course, as Madhavisa described this morning, and I didn't expect Madhavisa was going to say that when he said, Prabhupada, how can we please you the most? Because the one I heard, which was also there, so Prabhupada said different things to different devotees. So when one of the book distributors asked that question in Mayapur, how can we please you the most? Prabhupada said, you develop your love of Krishna. So that was how. You know, this is what Prabhupada wanted, is all these other things. You know, he wanted to develop our love for Krishna. So that's what I thought he was going to say, but Prabhupada said, I'm happy when you're struggling. So that's also good. Me, Srila Prabhupada said, after I was his servant and I finally left, and Hari Sari was with him, when Prabhupada saw me and offered obeisances and I stood up, Grahastha with my child and my wife living in the temple in Hawaii, running the restaurant. And he said, as he would often say, you know, how are you? So what else do you say when Prabhupada says, how are you? When you're looking at him and you're like, I'm wonderful, everything's fine. Because you're looking at Prabhupada and didn't matter what was going on, when you looked at him, everything was wonderful. You know, there was all problems solved. You just needed his presence in front of you to feel that. And then at that time, he looked at me and said, just chant Hare Krishna and be happy. Someone asked me, did Prabhupada ever really say chant Hare Krishna and be happy? I said, yes, he said it right to me. So I'm still trying to do both those things, chant Hare Krishna and be happy. Yes, go on. the time. All the time. He never said, he did actually, a couple times he said, it's okay. And it was in Krishna Balaram temple, or in his quarters, because his quarters, from his sitting room, before it was finished, the servant's quarters was in between his sitting room and his bathroom, which he used, you know, in the middle of the night when he was translating. So I would sleep on the floor at that time, on my back, on a straw mat. And so there were a few times when he walked through the servant's quarters, and I always heard him because he had his slippers on, and you hear Prabhupada shuffling his feet, you know. And I'd hear him, and I'd wake up, and I'd roll over. And I didn't get a crouch. I actually literally, because I was lying down on my back, I would roll over and just do a dandavat. And I'd be chanting, Namo Vishnu Padaya. And he'd say, no, that's okay. Sleep, sleep. And then he'd come back from the bathroom doing the same thing. I'd hear him and I'd roll over and Namo Vishnu. He'd say, no, take rest. It's okay, take rest. But other than that, never, ever said it. And I mean, I could, you know, just during lunch, you could literally offer obeisances a dozen times in like 20 minutes. So, and I was massaging him one day, and this was in Atlanta, and it was in his room, and I was behind him, massaging his back, and his, it was Nitai, Sanskrit editor at the time. So that was always a very good time to ask Prabhupada questions, because it was like when you were giving him massage, there was no disturbance going. If you just didn't go into his room whenever you wanted to ask Prabhupada something, even if it was about in his translating work, you just kind of didn't want to do that. But his massage was kind of like open door almost. People would come in, the secretary would read the letters to him, Prabhupada would dictate responses. So it was, he didn't just get a massage. It was also like part of the like business was going on, his business, his service. So I'm behind and I'm rubbing Prabhupada's back. Let me put this down. I have to talk with my hands. And Nitai came in. He offered obeisances. We didn't offer dandavats. We offered obeisances. And then he sat up and he asked Prabhupada a question. And Prabhupada gave him an answer. It might have been about a verse, the transliteration, something like that. So then he left, and a few minutes later, he came back into the room. The whole time I'm massaging Prabhupada's back, so he came back in the room. And again, he offered obeisances. And you heard him saying things like that. And he's chanting, but it was quicker. And then he sat up and he asked Prabhupada a question. And Prabhupada responded. Then he left the room. Then he came back a couple minutes later and he just touched his head down, you know, and sat up and he asked Prabhupada a question. And Prabhupada looked at him and he said, what is this hatchet? Because that was the movement he made with his body. He went like that. So Prabhupada said, what is this hatchet? And he called it a hatchet, which was like, really a very kind of amazing word to use, because a hatchet, you know, is a very deadly weapon. And he said, don't do this hatchet. He said, you offer obeisances before your spiritual master. Oh, that was what Prabhupada wanted. And we were with him, you know, every day. He said he never. Then, of course, our good friend Paramahamsa, since I told the one part, I have to tell the other part. Paramahamsa, he came along in 1974. I think he replaced maybe Brahmananda at the time. And so Nitai was there. And we were all young. Nitai was young. I was young. And now Paramahamsa was younger than me. So we were like the youngest crew Prabhupada had. And Paramahamsa was, you know, good 6 foot tall and, you know, big. Like a cherub, a nice round face. He had a very angelic look. And we were very close, still close, Paramahamsa and myself. So he was very ecstatic when, you know, when you join the party, Prabhupada, like, you go from whatever it is you're doing, you're traveling with Prabhupada. You know, you're not just you're with Prabhupada, like, all the time, you know, you're the classes, you're in the morning walks, you're leading the kirtan, it's just the life with Prabhupada. That's, you know. And so he was in complete ecstasy. And one of the things, he became sannyas in 1972 at Kartik in Vrindavan, Radha Damodar Temple. And when he did, some of the devotees complained because he was very young. He was a brahmachari from like Boulder, Colorado, him and his friend Parbhajakacharya. And it's a little long story, but I'll give it a brief description. So Prabhupada said that they could take sannyas. And some of the other devotees getting sannyas, they were like, who are these people? What have they done? They haven't done anything. Why, you know, what's their qualification to get sannyas? They were like annoyed, you know, that. And they were complaining. Even Prabhupada's secretary, that's Paramahamsa right there. Oh, I don't know if we could. So these Paramahamsa at the time, 72, I was 21. He might have been 20. You know, been a devotee for a couple years, was a brahmachari. And because he told Prabhupada, Prabhupada saw them in the courtyard one day at Radha Damodar Temple. Everybody's walking around. No one's walking around. Everyone's at Keshigat Palace. We're just trying to survive. You know, that's what the devotees did in India. They survived. So just taking care of getting yourself clean, getting your clothes clean. If Prabhupada wasn't giving class, you were just taking care of your bodily business. And but Paramahamsa is walking around before Radha Damodar, and Prabhupada sees him from his room. So he calls me in. He says, who is this? You know, who's this devotee? He's a big brahmachari. Prabhupada said, never saw him. You know, he said, who is this devotee? I said, oh, I don't know. He said, get him. So I went and I got him. And he comes in, you know, does dandavat in front of Prabhupada, sits up, and Prabhupada said, you know, where are you coming from? And he said, oh, my god brother and I, we were just in South India and doing some preaching, and you know, we've come here for this festival, nectar to hear from you. And Prabhupada says, well, you know, it was obvious he was kind of independent. You know, didn't seem to have an authority. And Prabhupada said, well, what are you doing after? And he said, well, we're thinking we're going to go to Vietnam to preach. And like Prabhupada's eyes just opened up. This was 1972. Vietnam was not the place you wanted to go to preach. And this is, you know, at that time, Agent Orange, whatever it was, you know, the napalm. I mean, people were getting killed, you know. The USA was over there fighting a war. And so when he said that, Prabhupada became very enlivened. And he said, acha, Vietnam? He was like, you know, like that was a big thing. And he says, yes, Prabhupada. And Prabhupada looked. He said, maybe I should give you sannyas. So now this was, you know, most brahmachari's dream was be sannyas, you know, because like you saw, you know, Prabhupada's offering is 100, you know, when you're sannyas, you get all of that, you know, you get the maha, all the maha, nice room. No, it's, you know, it was a great thing, you know, to be able to get sannyas from Srila Prabhupada. So Paramahamsa was caught off guard because he wasn't thinking about that. And then Prabhupada said, we should take sannyas. And then he said, well, yes. And then Prabhupada kind of, he said, all right. He said, well, he said, you go and pray in front of Srila Rupa Goswami's samadhi. He said, you ask Srila Rupa Goswami. He said, you chant. You sit there and chant. He said, and then see, and you can come back. So he went. Next day he comes back. And Prabhupada said, all right. So then he sent him to another, he said, you pray in front of Krishnadas Kaviraj. So he did this each day. He told him to do something, you know. So then after a few days, and then he said, you know, so what do you want? And his Paramahamsa says, yes, Prabhupada, take sannyas. You know? He became very excited about the idea. So then he said, all right. He said, tell Shyama Sundar, my secretary, he said, to go to Lohi Bazaar. He said, you need to buy your cloth, your saffron cloth, and get your three bamboo, and the cloth to make your danda. And he said, we're having ceremony. I think it was on Rasayatra night, the full moon night. There was going to be initiation ceremony. There was first and second initiation. And sannyasi was being given to different devotees, Guru Kripa, Yasoda Nandan. And yes, Prabhupada, yes. So he goes out the door. He finds Shyama Sundar and said, Prabhupada said, take me to Lohi Bazaar. You have to, you know, help me. I have to get my cloth and everything. I'm going to be taking sannyas. And Shyama Sundar looked at him. He said, you're not taking sannyas. He said, Prabhupada didn't tell me anything. You know, he was his secretary, so he was sure. He said, Prabhupada never told me. And Paramahamsa, just a young guy. He said, no, Prabhupada said. He said, ask Prabhupada. He said, I'm taking sannyas with the others. He said, well, I'll ask him. And Prabhupada said, yes. So then it went around the rumor mill that these boys, these young guys who no one even knew who they were connected to, they're taking sannyas. And some of them, they were upset. You know, they didn't think they were qualified. And one of the devotees said, they don't even know any slokas. You know, they don't even know how to chant any slokas. How can they take sannyas, you know? So Prabhupada gave them sannyas at that time. And at that ceremony, actually Prabhupada said that he said that the demigods had come for this fire sacrifice. He said that Narada Muni was there. Srila Rupa Goswami was there. Prabhupada said all these personalities. This was big, big jagya right there at Radha Damodar Temple, 1972. All these Western Vaishnavas Prabhupada was making. So everybody was there. Everyone came from all around. And Prabhupada said they were there. And so that was 1972. And they tried to get into Vietnam, but they couldn't. And they actually wound up in Iran, which was just wasn't that much better. And they were there preaching. And Parbhajakacharya, he became like a yoga instructor for the daughter of the Shah of Iran. And I mean, they did some very good preaching work. So anyway, now it's a couple years later, and this same Paramahamsa, he's Prabhupada's secretary. Just like that, he became Prabhupada's secretary. And it's in Juhu. And he was just so excited, you know, we were excited. So Prabhupada rang his bell. Prabhupada, that's what he had in the system. Prabhupada rang his bell. The servant went in. No one else went in. The servant went in. Prabhupada tells you what he wants. So that's why 24/7, servant was there. 24/7, the servant was there. And he said, get Paramahamsa. So I get Paramahamsa. So Paramahamsa comes in. This is his first, you know, first day of service as Prabhupada's secretary. He comes in and Prabhupada's sitting behind his desk. And Paramahamsa does full dandavat, you know. 6-foot body, so it's like 8 foot of Paramahamsa lying on the floor, hands outstretched. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasad. Then he starts chanting more slokas. So he had learned some. I guess he was so offended by the sannyasis that he really memorized lots of slokas. So then he starts chanting more slokas in praise of his spiritual master, you know, Krishna's pure devotee. And Prabhupada's sitting behind his desk. And so then this went on for a couple days. Every time Paramahamsa would go in, Prabhupada would call him. Paramahamsa would go in, he'd lie down on the floor, you know, Namaham Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasadaya, and then he'd start chanting, you know, and just this. He's just going on and on chanting. So after, you know, like the third time, he's there, and Prabhupada goes, get up. He said, how are we going to get any work done, you lying on the floor? So that was the other side of obeisances. You know, Prabhupada was we had to show that respect, but at the same time, Prabhupada's sitting there waiting. Prabhupada could become impatient, you know, and he said, sit up, he said. How are we going to get any work done? So that was the last time Paramahamsa did that. So main thing, you have to be very conscious to be around Prabhupada. And he didn't do it. You offer obeisances, not offer obeisances. Prabhupada didn't care, but he protected. He cared for us. He didn't want us to commit offenses, and that's an offense. In Juhu, this is before the tower was built, when he was on the third floor in the flats, he would come down. There was a pretty garden out front, Narayan, and made the garden. Others, there's a very nice garden there, Juhu, the tropics. And Prabhupada would come down for his morning walk. And so all the devotees would be out. Every day it was same time, give or take a few minutes. So everyone would be there, and Prabhupada would come down the stairs and be next to him, and Prajumna. Of course, everyone would offer obeisances. And the one day we came down, and everyone offered obeisances. There was one young local boy devotee, and he stood there with his hands folded. And Prabhupada was walking along, and he turned to me and he said, this is the beginning of his fall down. And he just kept walking like that was it, And I thought, we talk about razor's edge, such. You offer obeisances, you're very good, You can make nice advancements so simply with Srila Prabhupada. But he didn't. He said, this is the beginning of his fall down, because there was no respect to the spiritual master. What's a little water? All I can tell you is I never went before him without bowing down, without putting my head on the ground. I don't know what others did. I'm sure it happened. I don't know. What do you know, Jai Garunga? You know anything? I just heard about your father. Your father?
Oh, my father. But that was a different story. No, this is about
I know.
My father, that's a different story. He was a fucked up man.
But he bowed down, I heard, when everyone else did.
He would not. I invited my father to come to the temple. And, he was a professor, medical doctor, conductor of the Philharmonic Orchestra, a marquis from Spain, living in Beverly Hills, all these places, down a few times in the temple, but he always looked at down and asked a bunch of hippies. Just for him to come to take his shoes off to come into the temple was so one day Prabhupada was here, and I thought, I'll invite my father to come and introduce my father to Prabhupada. So definitely my father came. That was in the old temple room. So my father came, take off his shoes, and he went in, and there were four or five devotees sitting there. One day was chanting the harmonium. And my father was there, fucked up, and arrogant. And I tell my father, look, there's the Mahamantra there, champion. And all of a sudden, the door to Prabhupada's quarters, and thank you, Vyasa-san, opened up, and who was in Prabhupada? Now, he was regal. He was aristocratic. He was China, but at the same time, so humble and simple. He was in. And of course, we all see Prabhupada, and we all hear the floor. This fucked up, arrogant man, nicely, elegantly dressed, and everything, marquise, he sees
Very well.
And then Prabhupada came, and he was standing right next to my father, like the apple. Prabhupada came right next to me with us, and he could see us. He was such a sweet, beautiful smile, both of us, and carried on. Needless to say, my father's life was changed after that. And he even wrote a very nice thing about Prabhupada saying, because I asked my father, I said, what made you bow down? He said, you did not believe in any of these. Anybody could see that.
Yes.
Anybody could see that.
Yeah.
Can I relate one more little incident? Yeah. I happened to be with Srila Prabhupada one day walking in LAX. Okay. And it was my good fortune that, you know, that day I was there when Prabhupada's car arrived. And I had, you know, I got a chance to open Prabhupada's car door. And I had a flower that I'd been keeping in a little plastic bag with water to give to Srila Prabhupada. So, you know, I opened the door and I helped him out of the car. I couldn't believe my luck, you know. I mean, like, I'm there, you know, an insignificant little brahmachari, you know. And I get to open the door to Prabhupada and hold his hand for him to come out. Then I give him the flower and he takes it and says, thank you very much. And then he starts walking into the L.A. airport, you know. And, you know, there was Ramananda and a few, you know, devotees with him. And I'm just behind walking, you know. And the doors to the L.A. airport open up. And there's the metal detectors, you know. And there's two long lines of people waiting to go through, okay. Now, nobody went and told them anything or, you know, something grabbed their attention, and they everybody just turned around, you know. And when they saw Prabhupada, immediately they all moved. They all parted for Prabhupada to walk through. And nobody told them, hey, look, this is a special person. No, no, they did it automatically on their own. That's the kind of person Prabhupada was. The minute you saw Prabhupada, he commanded that respect, like my father said. You know, anybody could see that.
What do you think? Yeah, you. Because you're asking about the muddy spots and things. Well, Prabhupada's disciples, they would have laid down in the mud for Prabhupada to walk over them, use them as a, you know, the mat to walk over. There was no question. Anything they would do for Prabhupada. Yeah, he was very practical. Yeah, could be over the top. I have some pretty bizarre stories, but I won't tell it. It's a little hard to understand sometimes. But yeah, devotees, you know, do anything for Srila Prabhupada. But here, going back to New Dwarka here, I, you know, remember Prabhupada coming out the door one winter time. One of those, sometimes here in New Dwarka, it can be very, very cold, you know. So those of you who live here know that. Close to freezing. So, you know, 1973, we were, you know, Prabhupada's disciples were just so detached from everything. And at that time, I mean, brahmacharis didn't own anything. You know, you had to, I remember the bin, you know, there was a bin upstairs with the dhotis, you know, one person was doing the dhoti washing and everything. And so it was first come, first serve in the morning. So for some, that was definitely helped them get up very early in the morning because you would get the best choice of what to wear. But Prabhupada came down for his morning walk and, you know, he had his coat, in that saffron coat, you know, with the hood and chadar and shoes and socks. And we were with Prabhupada, so he always saw that we also had what we needed. You know, we had socks and sweaters. Prabhupada was always giving us sweaters and quilts, blankets. He gave me quilts and blankets, sweaters, socks. And but he came down, and there was all these Karunda was there, the different, and these brahmacharis were there. And no one had anything. They were standing there like in dhoti and a kurta or a t-shirt, whatever it might be, you know. And they're just like a hand in their bead bag waiting for Prabhupada for however long, freezing. And Prabhupada opened the door, and Prabhupada looked, and he said, why don't they have coats? You know, and he just looked, turned like to Karunda, the temple president or whatever, and it was like, Prabhupada, well, yes, you know, we'll get them. Yeah, get them. He said they all have to be, you know, have proper clothing. So this was from the top, from the very top. This is how it was. You know, this is why we gave our lives to Prabhupada, because he cared for you. He loved you, and he reciprocated. But very quickly, things could dissipate from that top, from Prabhupada's, how he did things, to how things got translated on down to where, you know, people were limited to 5 chickpeas because Prabhupada said, you know, 5, you know, there were all these things that were going on in temples. But Prabhupada was like full of abundance for everyone, you know, was eat as much as, you know, take as much as you want, you know, but eat whatever you take. There was no waste involved. And he said, when you're young, he said, you can't overeat, which means you can eat a lot when you're young. He said, and when you're old, you can't eat too little. So when you're young, you can't eat too much because you digest when you're young. And when you're old, he said, you can't eat too little. You know, this is the things I heard from Prabhupada. And you know, one man can eat one chapati, another man can eat 10 chapatis. But we had all these things, you know, like you're only allowed so many chapatis, you're only allowed so much of this, and so much of this, and so much of this. You know, so the austerity was there. But when he saw his disciples, you know, shivering, he was just like, yeah, just do something for them. Anyone else have any questions? Yes. Breakfast. Breakfast was normally whatever fruits were, you know, available locally. You would have fruits, and Prabhupada liked all the difference. He ate very good variety, you know, of fruit. And so the plate mainly was fruits. If it was very cold, Huluva could be there. He liked Huluva, and he said when it was cold, he could digest. You know, remember, Prabhupada was, 75, when I was with him. 1972, he was already 76, right? 76 years old, and he was eating three meals a day. But breakfast was normally fruit with yogurt or milk and sweets. There were always milk products were always there. Hot milk was there, or yogurt was there, and sweets. Sandesh was, because that was, Sandesh you could travel with. You could keep for a week if you make it properly, even without refrigeration, So, like that. And then dinner, lunch dinner or supper dinner? So then at lunchtime, 1 o'clock, that was main meal, Prabhupada, like Ayurveda says, the digestion is best when the sun is highest in the sky, so which that's lunchtime. So that was the main meal. Prabhupada very much followed Ayurvedic principles. Didn't talk about it a whole lot because he had more important things to discuss. But he followed very much, if you know all these different little things about Ayurveda, how much sleep you should get, what hours you should be sleeping, when you shouldn't be sleeping, what you should eat, when you should eat. It's all according to this, Ayurveda. So lunchtime was rice, chapatis, dal, sabjis. Again, sweet would be there. Maybe a little banana at the end. And chapatis could range from, 3 to 6. Normally, and these aren't huge chapatis, or like nice and thin, like thin chapati. And then the evening, around 9 o'clock or so, that was, like lunchtime. He normally didn't tell you what he wanted. If he did, then you did it. But that would be in addition to all the normal lunch preparations. But dinner was always what he requested. So he could call you in 7, 8 o'clock and say, tonight I want. There was always hot milk, sweetened hot milk. And sometimes, like here, we'd say make, puris. Puris was a favorite and a vegetable. Sometimes we'd say, like, eggplant and potato. That's like a, that's a pretty good meal, 9 o'clock at night. Puris, eggplant, potato, sandesh or rasgulas and hot milk. And then he'd be translating at 1 o'clock in the morning, And as time went by, that decreased, even like 1975-ish, where he was asking for puffed rice a lot more at night, which was a savory preparation, puffed rice. And so like that. So that was around 9 at night. But there was always something. The night didn't pass without him having something. And always hot milk with either sugar or honey. Little sugar, a little honey in it. And yes. The chips? Okay. That was when I was first with Prabhupada, my very first weeks with him. And of course, I was, young boy from Philadelphia, Italian descent. So I had been with Prabhupada now literally just 2 weeks, and I was doing everything, and I was doing okay. So we were in San Francisco. We had just gotten there, and we stayed at some, the devotees knew this one. He was favorable. He was a hippie character. So he said Prabhupada could stay in his place. So they spent days having to, disinfect and clean everything from top to bottom. So he had a good exchange for a couple of days. Prabhupada stayed there. He got the place spotless, And they really had to do a lot of work. So they set up the kitchen. They bring the ghee. It was a ghee and a wok. Basic things were there. And Prabhupada called me in. And he said, you can give me puri and chips. So I said, okay. So I went back and, I made a puri dough, which was just white flour. It was white flour and ghee, a little ghee. And then I had to make chips. He said, chips, potato chips. So I knew what potato chips were. I ate them all the time, So But I thought, it's going to be hard. But, I peeled the potato, and I'm slicing as thin as I could, the chips. Then I fried them all, and I had one puri or two puris. You'd start out with that. And they also puffed up. I brought it into Prabhupada. I put it down in front of him, and he looks at me. He says, "What is this?" I said, "They're chips, Prabhupada." He said, "These aren't chips." And I'm thinking, now imagine, I'm thinking, yeah, they're chips, He said, "These aren't chips." And he said, "Never mind," like that, And I was like, "Never mind, I could just floor you," like a boom. Prabhupada, every movement was zoom, it was like whatever it was, there was a lot there, a lot of energy there. If he pointed, he could cut you down, So he just went, "Never mind, go ahead, go on," get out of here. Oh, I was like, that was it. I was like depressed. I went in and I rolled another puri and I brought it back to him. I brought the puri and offered a basis and sat up. And he said, "These are good." He said, you can bring more. So I thought, oh, that's good. So we had more chips. We had puris. And that was 1972. So finally, when I'm doing this story, I finally figured out what chips were. It took me 20 years to figure out what chips were. They were British. Chips were French fries. So he wanted, Prabhupada was brought up, in the British era. So chips, like fish and chips. He wanted puris and chips. And I think, man, I wish I would have made, because I would have done that every night for him, make him fries, because I would have been very happy to have Maha French fries every night, cooked in ghee. But as it turned out, he never asked for chips again, 4 years, right into 75, I guess he just thought, I'm not asking this boy for chips. He doesn't know how to make a chip. But so that's what he meant, but I didn't know it. And years and years went by, and until I was writing it down, and I thought, chips, I know what chips are. So that was chips. Vishaka, you had a question back there? Oh, the chatter. Yes, because we have this chatter. She's holding this chatter. You can go around with it. Anyway, let me show it first, everybody. You have to see. This is one of my favorite things. It's Prabhupada's chatter. And like I said, Prabhupada gave me, many things while I was with him. And most everything he gave me, I gave away. This, if you'll see, just watch this there. Because all you have to do is look at one out of two slides, you'll see this chatter. See this Lohi chatter, Prabhupada's wool chatter. And this was 1975, so I was a grahasta by this time. And I'm traveling with Prabhupada. I had been with him now, off and on for over 2 years. And we were in Mayapur. You just saw a picture of Prabhupada in Mayapur. So we were in Mayapur at Prabhupada's room, and there was this big flurry going on. So one of Prabhupada's sannyasis, he decided he wanted that chatter, because this chatter was the chatter. I think it was with Prabhupada from the very beginning. If not from the beginning, it was with him from the 60s. So now it's 1975. And this sannyasi decided he wanted this chatter because it was very special. So he had a plan. And the plan was, being in Mayapur, he was going to get not just a Kashmir chatter, but like a santush. I don't know if there's Kashmir. Like if you go to Rodeo Drive, you might be able to find santush chatter. It's very, very special hairs from just one particular goat up in the Himalayas, and you can get so many hairs from it. Yes. And that's the quality of it. It's very, very warm, but very thin. You can pick the corner of it and pull the entire chatter through a ring like this. It's so thin and very expensive. So he thought, simple. He'd buy Srila Prabhupada one of these chatters, and he did it. So he comes into the room, and other devotees are there, and I'm sitting there, and he comes in very excited, and he puts this chatter down on Prabhupada's table. And Prabhupada's sitting there, and he said, "Prabhupada, I want to give you this chatter." And Prabhupada looks at it and takes it. And he says, "Very nice." And he puts it on the, he had his shelf right behind him. If you see pictures of Prabhupada in Mayapur's sitting room, his shelf was right behind him. And he said, "Very nice." He puts it behind him. And he said, "When I was young," he said, "my father," of course, his father was in textiles, right? His father was a cloth merchant. He said, "Well, one of my father's close friends, he dealt in these chatters." He said, "And every year I would get one of these very nice chatters." He said, "Very nice. But is what he was saying was, this isn't anything. You know, I had these from the time I was a little boy. I was getting them every year. Thank you very much." And he put it behind him. So it just completely destroyed, because his next thing was going to be, "Prabhupada, can I please have your chatter?" But he couldn't say it because of what Prabhupada did. And Prabhupada did it, you know, he knew what he was doing. He knew who he was dealing with. He knew, Prabhupada knew how to put us in our places. You know, Prabhupada knew how to help us become humble. That's the business of guru. So you can learn how to become humble. So then, the one thing that did happen, which I never had, was I developed a great desire in my heart for that chatter. A seed, a desire seed, like just sprung up immediately. Yeah, I was Prabhupada all the time, and all of a sudden now I had this desire to have this chatter. But I couldn't do anything then. I knew it wasn't the time. So I was also a little bit thoughtful and tricky and devious. So I thought, well, when the time's right, I'm going to get this chatter, you know. So I devised a plan, which came to pass like more than a month later, because then I knew I would be in the right spot. And that spot was Vrindavan, Krishna Balaram Mandir. And when we, no sooner we arrived there, and of course there were special people there everywhere, Prabhupada's disciples, so many special disciples. And so there was, you know, Daivashakti, Palika, Jamuna, and all these were like, they were all my Matajis, my sisters, my big sisters and things, and they were very kind to me. And the one who went and did the shopping in Delhi, that was Palika at the time, because you couldn't get any of these things in Vrindavan. So I happened to have, you know, some rupees. At the time it was like 7 rupees to a dollar. Now it's 62 rupees to a dollar. Then it was 7.5 rupees to a dollar. So I gave her whatever it was, 100 rupees, 50 rupees. And I said, "I want you to buy me a chatter." I said, just like that. I said, just like Prabhupada's chatter. I said, "I want a gray wool Lohi," that's what it is, Lohi. Lohi brand chatter. "Can you get that?" So she said, "Yeah, we're going to Delhi." They went to Delhi like once a week, you know, to get special vegetables and things for Prabhupada. So it took, you know, it took some time. So then she came back with it, and it was, you know, it was like Prabhupada's, but it was brand new. It was very nice. It was wool. It was inexpensive. It wasn't, didn't cost hundreds of dollars or anything. It cost $10. So I had the chatter. And so one afternoon, as soon as I got it, I went into Prabhupada's room, Krishna Balaram Mandir, in his quarters. And he was sitting behind his nice desk there. It was a little rounded behind him. There's a shelf there behind him. And I offered obeisances. He didn't ring the bell. I just went into his room, and I'm holding this chatter. And for the obeisances and sat up. So he's looking at me like, yes, you know, because he didn't call me. So, and he, Prabhupada always knew everything I was doing. What a thought. And he said, yes. And I said, well, Prabhupada, it's so funny. You know? I said, Prabhupada, I just bought this chatter. I said, it's cold here in Vrindavan. I bought this chatter for myself. And he's looking at me going, yes, very good. You know, you need a chatter. Prabhupada had a way of, like, he never let you finish with me. He never let me finish a sentence. Before I could finish, he would already be saying something else. So I'm trying to get all of this out, because whenever I talk to Srila Prabhupada, I thought about what I was going to say. You know how they say 10 times you should think something? Well, I would do that. I would literally go over everything I was going to say so I didn't make a mistake, because you never wanted to say something and have them just crush you, you know. I didn't. So I was very careful when I chose my words. So, and then you'd have to prepare for all the different responses he might have. So there was preparation involved. I didn't just go in carelessly. I prepared. I did my homework. And I said, Prabhupada, I knew he would say that. Fine, you got a chatter. Be happy. And he said, yeah, very good. He said, it's cold. I said, yes, Prabhupada. I said, but you're my spiritual master. And I said, I want you to have this chatter. And he said, no, no. And he pointed behind him. The chatter is right there. It's chatter that I want. I have to have. And he said, no, I have a chatter. And I said, yes, I know, Prabhupada. I said, but I would much rather you have this chatter. I said, it's brand new. I said, your chatter is old. And again, as he always did, you never, you know, there was never any change or adjustment. You know, we say Prabhupada didn't like changes. He didn't change, so he never changed his opinion. So at a second time, I said, Prabhupada, I really want you to have it. You know, you're my spirit. No, no, no. I have a chatter. So then, from experience and being with him for quite some time, I said, all right, this isn't going anywhere. And I looked at him, and I said, Prabhupada, I would much rather have your chatter. And he smiled real big. He said, okay. So, gave him his brand new chatter, and I grabbed that and ran out of the room. So, God. So he said to me, one time when he gave me and the boys Paramahamsa and Nitai, it was in Atlanta, and it was cold. This was beginning of March in Atlanta, and it was a cold spell. It can be very cold there as well at beginning of March. And we had just come from Juhu, came from 6 months in India, and we went through Hawaii, Los Angeles, Mexico City, Caracas. Everywhere was pleasant, you know, pretty warm. So now all of a sudden we went through Miami, now we're in Atlanta, and it's freezing. And we're all on the morning walk with Prabhupada, and I have those funny little Indian chapels on, you know, with the toe ring around the big toe, and we have no socks, because we traveled very light with Prabhupada, you know. I did, and they did too. Paramahamsa was a sannyasi, so we all had sandals, no socks, and we're out on the morning walk. So the next morning, it's like 5 in the morning, and Srila Prabhupada calls me into his room. And he says, do you have socks? He knew I didn't have socks, you know. And I said, no, Prabhupada. He said, well, go into my almirah, he said, and get yourself some socks. And I said, Prabhupada, I can't use your socks. I said, you know, spiritual master. I said, I can't. He said, it's okay. If I say you can wear my socks, you can wear my socks. He said, so get yourself some socks. So, again, I learned with Prabhupada over time, if he says something, you just do it. Be happy, grateful, and actually be really happy, because the idea of having Prabhupada's socks was very exciting. So, I went, and Prabhupada had a lot of nice socks. People were always giving him sweaters, socks, and, you know, all these things. So he said, and the others, Nitai Paramahamsa, do they have socks? And I said, no, I don't think so. He said, well, get enough socks. He said, for all of you. I said, yes, Prabhupada. And then I sit down now, I'm with these socks, you know, and I'm like, like a kid at Christmas with Prabhupada's socks, and I can't wait to get them on my feet. You know, they were Prabhupada's. I thought they had, you know, they have special powers. And then he looks at me and he says, "Do you have shoes?" And I said, "Prabhupada, I said I can't wear your shoes." And he said, "If I say you can do it, it's all right." I was a very easy target with Prabhupada. He could have told me anything. If he said it was all right, it was all right. So he said, "If I say it's all right, it's all right." He said, "They just gave me these shoes." He said, "I've worn them and they don't fit properly." He said, "I don't like them." He said, "So take them. If they fit you," he said, "use them." I said, "Yes, Prabhupada." Now I'm like really excited. I have socks and shoes from Prabhupada. So he said, "All right." So I have it, you know, and I offer obeisances. I leave the room. I go into the servants' quarters, Paramahamsa. We're all there in the same room right across from Prabhupada. And I knew my godbrothers, too, and, you know, I also like having fun playing with everyone. So I said, "Look what Prabhupada gave me. Gave me socks and shoes to use, you know?" So immediately they look at me and say, "You can't use, you know, you can't use Prabhupada's socks. You can't use his shoes." I said, "Well, he said it's okay." He said, "Hey, you can't use Prabhupada's pure devotee, spiritual man, you know." And I said, "Oh, all right." I said, "Because some of these socks are for you." And they went, "Oh, okay." So we're all sitting there like a bunch of little kids, and we're just putting on Prabhupada's socks, you know, like pulling them up, and we just were so happy, you know. And then I went in the corner, and I'm like, tried his shoes on. So now they didn't fit him. If they were didn't fit him and were too big, they would have fit me because my feet were bigger than Prabhupada. But they were too small for Prabhupada, so I tried them on, and they, as much as I would have loved to have had them and used them, I couldn't, so... But at that time, he said to me, when he said, "It's okay if I say it's okay." And then he said, "When you get a gift," he said, "from the spiritual master," he said, "in his presence, you can use it." He said, "But then after he leaves," he said, "it becomes worshipable." He said, "You can't use anything that he gives you." He said, "That becomes worshipable." So Prabhupada made it very clear what to do and what we could do. And I said, "Yes, Prabhupada, okay." So that was, these were the little things, you know, these little wonderful things that, how would you know? Just like the question you asked, you know, "Prabhupada, what's in that? Don't pay your obeisances in the mud, you know. Move over next to the mud and offer your obeisances." You know, we have common sense and practical, so. But it was so nice that Prabhupada would do things and tell you things. And so he made life so easy. Made it so much easier. I would go in and ask him. Sometime I'd ask him, say, "They're doing this in the temple." And he'd say, "Oh, you Americans." That was his line always, you know. Because I told Shalavati, who was the head pujari, this is when temple room was in there. And, you know, everyone would ask. I'd come up, what did you do? And I'd say, "Well, I just fed Prabhupada lunch." And I say, you know, I bring him his lunch, and then I make chapatis fresh, run them back and forth. And so I told Shalavati, and she said, "Really? You know, is that?" I said, "Yeah, that's, you know, that's what you do, you know." So then a couple of days later, she says to me, "Shruti Kirti," she said, "I'm serving the deities hot puris." I said, "What do you mean?" She said, "Well, I make them each a puri and put it on their plates. When I bring it in, then I go back into the kitchen and I make puris, and I go back into the on the altar and I'm putting puris. I put hot puris down on their plate for them so they can have hot puris." And I'm there, yeah. So I thought, this doesn't sound good, you know. So I went to Prabhupada. I said, "Prabhupada." So I would just, you know, tell Prabhupada things. And he'd, I'd say, "Prabhupada, Shalavati just told me she's running hot puris in and out of the room, you know, to the deities. Just like I do with you." And Prabhupada shook his head and said, "She can't do that." She said, "They're eating. Once they're eating, you can't go in the room." She said, "You just have to let them eat." I said, "Yes, Prabhupada." So then I'd go out and tell Shalavati. Prabhupada said, "No, that's a no-no. That's a definite no-no. You know, don't invent. You know, don't invent your own style." So this was nice. And You know, whenever I did ask, I always knew Prabhupada's response, but it was very important. It was Prabhupada's response. I couldn't respond to it, but, you know, as soon as it was a Prabhupada said, you can do this. A Prabhupada said, you couldn't do this. You know, that, and then that finished. You know, it was done. Yes. Yes, Prabhu. Special. This is Prabhupada coming from Massad right there. This should have been over here. Everybody could have seen. Well, certainly he gave, you know, individual instructions, understanding. You know, he told me different things, it was, you know, that I should do. Here in Los Angeles, he told me to become very well-read, very expert in Chaitanya Charitamrita, and give classes on Chaitanya Charitamrita. So he told me that here, which was, to me, was a, you know, I had never, ever given a class. And I never saw past the day I was woke up in. Like, I never thought, you know, when I was with Prabhupada, I never imagined not being with Prabhupada. What to speak of being 60 years old, you know, with grandchildren. None of these things I imagined. So Prabhupada gave that instruction. I still haven't done it, but it did. And I told some, made me understand one thing, is Prabhupada understood, knew me very well. Because if you can see him sitting here, and all I do is tell stories about Srila Prabhupada, and hopefully there's philosophy in there that we can absorb and help us ourselves become better, better devotees. But do you have more of the water? But so I realized Prabhupada understood very well that, you know, because Chaitanya Charitamrita, when anyone talks about Chaitanya Charitamrita, what do? They tell stories from Chaitanya Charitamrita. So Prabhupada understood that you know, that was perhaps one of my things that I could do. So thank you. This is from the feast today. You know, I said feasting and fasting, you know, when you're older, it's a tough thing, and little bubbly water helps. So, yes, you know, but I mean, as far as instruction, what we do, this is my favorite picture right there. That was at the Ganga. Across the street from the temple, and Prabhupada squatted down and he took water. You know, and that's what he would do. He'd say, 3 drops, all you need on your head, 3 drops. I was in Mayapur, right across from the front gate. Yes. That's Vrindavan. That's Los Angeles. I mean, New York. I was New York, Brooklyn Street.
Back to the and, you know, 2 or 3 hours to come by, and
Okay. Are we okay, Nagapati? Everything okay here? Everyone's happy here? There's light prasadam, right? Everyone's getting light prasadam outside? Puffed rice? No. This is... All right, I have to do what he asks. So this was Prabhupada traveling from Mexico City to Caracas, Venezuela. And Prabhupada was in Mexico City. As I said, it was, for me, it was so wonderful being there, seeing not just children, but children's parents becoming devotees. You know, this was the first place in our society that children and their parents and grandparents were becoming devotees. You know, in a Mexican population, they were very pious and very eager to accept Krishna consciousness. And the one lady, elderly lady, she asked Prabhupada a question. Maybe you translated it. At the end of his classes were, you know, very basic. We have to become Krishna conscious. We have to use this lifetime to, because at the time of death, we want to remember Krishna. You know, so we have to engage ourselves in devotional service. So at the end of the class, a lady, very pious, sweet lady, she said, Prabhupada, you know, what happens if at the end of this lifetime we don't remember Krishna, but we remember you? And Prabhupada said, that's all right. So that's what we're promoting. Very easy to remember Srila Prabhupada, not a difficult thing. Remembering Krishna sometimes, you know, Krishna can seem a little far away for some, for me. I don't know about some of you, but for me sometimes... You know, as much as I want to, and it's difficult, but we walk beside Prabhupada. We're walking beside him. Prabhupada's here. All his books are here. So many ways we can remember Prabhupada. So, and it's all you think about when you remember Prabhupada is Krishna. So, therefore, it's as good, and just as good. So then, on this trip, as I said, Prabhupada always took prasadam. Three times a day on the airplane. I don't remember any airplane rides where there wasn't prasadam, that we weren't eating prasadam on the plane. So as soon as the plane goes up, the woman had given me a bag, paper bag, and in the paper bag was puffed rice and peanuts. So it's a savory, salty prep. And that's all we had this day. It was this little bag in aluminum foil with puffed rice and peanuts. They say muri. And we're called Moody. And it was one of Prabhupada's favorites, puffed rice, like puffed rice. And it's very light and filling and healthy. And so as soon as the plane would go up, Prabhupada would look and just, you know, give you that nod. You just knew. You knew. When you were with Prabhupada, you knew. All he had to do was look at you, and you were supposed to know. And so he said, first-class servant knows what to do without being asked. That's first class. So we just go. So put Prabhupada's table down and put mine down. I open up the aluminum foil, don't even have a plate, spoon, nothing, just this puffed rice, and put it over to Prabhupada. So this was his first meal, and Prabhupada would, you know, take it in his fingers and put it in his mouth, wouldn't touch his lips, nothing, you know. And he's eating, and I'm in this right next to Prabhupada. He sits at the window all the time. I'm in the middle seat. Paramahamsa's next to me, and then there's the aisle. So Prabhupada's chewing, munching on the puffed rice and peanuts, and we're just sitting in our seats. And then he ate half of it, you know. And then he looks and says, like that, you know, okay, now you can take. That's what it means. Now it's yours. The remnants are yours. So this is not just Prabhupada's remnants. It's on the same little aluminum foil thing. You know, for us, this is like there's nothing better. You know, this is the best thing, the best possible. This is Maha Maha Prasadam, right from the hands, the lips of a pure devotee, and it's his remnants on his plate. Not just from his plate, it's on his plate. So, like, this is like the highest, we're talking the highest thing you can get. You know, so now I move it over, put Prabhupada's table up, I rip the aluminum foil in half, Paramahamsa gets half, and I get half. It's fair. That's fair. So we're sitting on the plane, you know, we're 1975, we're shaved heads, Tilak, Dodi, Corto, we're very strange people on our way to Caracas, Venezuela, you know. And then now Paramahamsa and I were eating, you know, not with quite the same devotion as Prabhupada exhibits. With everything he did, Prabhupada showed so much devotion, such consciousness. But we're Prabhupada's remnants, and we're hungry, and we're eating. So then, stewardess walking down the aisle, you know, we're towards the back, so she's walking down, and she looks, because she sees us two eating this puffed rice, and, you know, looking like you devotees here, nice shaved, shiny heads, and big tilaks, and she stops, and she sticks her hand out. She reaches past Paramahamsa, who's eating the puffed rice in the aisle seat, into my plate, grabs a handful of puffed rice, and throws it in her mouth. And, of course, I was shocked. Paramahamsa's eating, and Prabhupada's just looking straight ahead like nothing happened. And I'm like, this woman just stuck her hand in my plate, and she's taking Prabhupada's remnants, you know. It was, in every level, it was shocking. Every level. And then she looks at me and she goes, oh, this is really good. What is it? And I'm like, I said, it's puffed rice. And she said, oh, she said, well, you know, what are you up to? Why are you eating this? And then I'm there, well, you know, we're vegetarian. And so I just keep it simple and say, well, vegetarian, we have a special diet. She goes, oh, okay. Very smiley, you know, pretty young lady. And she said, can I get you anything else? And Paramahamsa's eating, and I'm just standing there, sitting there in the seat. So she said, can I get you anything else? So now, she's just this far, you know, she's here, Paramahamsa's here, I'm here, Prabhupada's right here. And Prabhupada's not, you know, Prabhupada's sannyasi. He's just sitting. Prabhupada, anything else? Goes, hot milk. So I said, we'll all have hot milk. Okay. She's like, oh, you know, okay, good. Anything else? She said, I can go up into the first class. She said, you know, there's fruit, bread, cheese, you know, all vegetarian, anything else you want. Prabhupada, yes, fruit, cheese, bread. So I said, okay. I said, we'll all have hot milk, fruit, cheese, bread. I said, you bring it, you know. So, all right, she said, I'll be back in, you know, 5 minutes. She said, I'll prepare everything and bring it back. So she leaves. And I look at Prabhupada, and I'm like, Prabhupada, that was amazing. Now, I meant that the fact that she took your remnants right out of my plate. I didn't invite her or anything. And Prabhupada goes, oh, he said, women have a natural tendency to serve. So he was talking about her getting hot milk fruit like that. He didn't answer my statement that she was, that Super Soul just, you know, made her do something that no one would ever do, you know, as a professional person in a restaurant or whatever it was, in an airplane. You don't just take food out of somebody's plate and throw it in your mouth. But he didn't answer that because Prabhupada was humble. So he didn't acknowledge the fact that she was like the most fortunate person, you know, ever. So she comes back, you know, 5 minutes later, 10 minutes later, and it's all cut up nice. She's got rolled down the tray, you know, the aisle. She rolls the cart down the aisle, and it's all like nice little devotee plates, like I would have done for Prabhupada. The fruit's all cut up. Everything's all put on the plate. It was very bizarre. And so we put it down and go to say, like, you know, then we just watch Prabhupada. There are no prayers going on. You know, you just, Prabhupada would grab like a piece of apple. So we would grab a piece of apple. We just imitated whatever he did. So whatever he grabbed, we would grab. So he grabbed an apple and put it to his mouth. So you'd wait till it hit his mouth. Because if you ate it first, then you were eating, you know, Maya. But once he touched it, then it was prasadam. Because that's what we do. We offer everything to Prabhupada. Everything we do, offer it to Prabhupada, become sanctified. So, you know, then he'd pick up his cup and we'd pick up. We were like shadows, you know. He'd pick up his cup, we'd pick up our cup. So he'd put it to his mouth, we'd put our cup to our mouth. So then we'd have our hot milk. So he was our offering. You know, he was our pujari. He sanctified, turned everything into Krishna's prasadam. So it was right there, right where Yasoda, Damodar Yasoda, standing over there was where I was talking that day. It was 20 years later, and Jai Gauranga was organizing Prabhupada festivals, and he invited me, and I was sitting there talking for a couple of hours, and I told that story, because it was, you know, amazing. Still to this day, it just it was a very amazing thing to happen, this fortune of this woman, and how much, you know, it shows. Krishna directs, you know, our wanderings, and according to our desires, he fulfills our desires. So after I was done, I was about to get up, and this devotee, man, you know, he comes up to me, and I'm still sitting down. He said, "Can I tell you a story?" And I'm there like, okay. And he said, you know, he said, "I've done a lot of Sankirtan book distribution and traveling in Brazil, South America, Mexico." And he said, you know, it was very difficult there and everything very far apart. We would go outside of the cities, you know, into the country, you know, in the villages, like old style, like, you know, these old countries have village places and fountains in the center and where people meet and they get their water and things. He said, so we would go there. He said, and we perform Harinam chanting. And then we go back into our jeeps. You know, we had four-wheel drive vehicles, so we get into the jeeps and then go like door to door. You'd have to drive, you know, farms, lots of farms. You'd drive from one place to the next. And he said, so I did that for, you know, a long time. He said, so one time I was way out. He said, like in a, you know, rainforest. And we went into the town square. We all chanted together. Then we went into our vehicles. He said, get in a four-wheel drive and go into dirt roads and things. And he said, so I pulled up to this one place, you know, farm-like place. He said, and I had my books and dressed like a devotee. He said, and I knocked on the door. And a woman answered the door. And she says, come in, you know, Hare Krishna. She says, Hare Krishna. He's out in the middle of nowhere in Brazil. She goes, Hare Krishna, come in. So now he said, I was shocked. So I go in and, you know, just pictures of Prabhupada, Radha Krishna. And he said, you're a devotee. She said, yes, yes. She said, for a long time. He says, well, when did you meet the devotees? She said, well, I was a stewardess on an on the plane, and I met Srila Prabhupada on the plane, she said. And I didn't know, she said, but, you know, somehow or other, I took off. Of course, now everything she knew, what she had done, she said, but I just grabbed some puffed rice things, that's how I met, she said. So then later on, got to meet devotees. And so this was her. This 20 years later, she's sitting in a little place just practicing Krishna consciousness by Prabhupada's mercy, by Prabhupada's Mahaprasadam. This is why we're so attached to anything to do with Srila Prabhupada. So all of us here, we're very, very fortunate. This is not an ordinary place by any means. And it's not just a temple. It's a temple where Prabhupada spent so much time. You know, you have a garden that Prabhupada said was his favorite place in the world. His favorite place, he said, in the whole world is that garden right there. You know, so visit it. Prabhupada sat there. Prabhupada walked there. He walked here. His quarters are upstairs. The tile floor is the same tile floor. They'll never, ever change it. Prabhupada walked his oily footprints and go up and down from that spot in the side room there under the skylight where he took massage, and he put his footprints down all the way into the bathroom. So all very special. You can get so much mercy just by meditating on Srila Prabhupada in these places. Feel his presence. If you feel his presence like anyone who is here, and even if you weren't here while Prabhupada was here, if you make an effort to understand, to feel the personality of Srila Prabhupada, you can. You can derive so much pleasure and ecstasy and benefit by meditating on him. He's open for everyone. We say the fact that you're here means you're connected to Srila Prabhupada. There's no question you can be here without Prabhupada's personal permission. Huh? He said, Prabhupada once told me in a dream, I don't talk about dreams, but this one, it was very simple. I asked him about the society, and Prabhupada said, I've established this branch of the Brahma Gaudiya Sampradaya, he said. This ISKCON branch I've established, he said, and it'll go on from this way. Everything that happens is just part of this branch, which is Srila Prabhupada's branch. So anyone coming by the endeavors of his followers, his books, it's all connected to Srila Prabhupada very directly. His potency is there. When I was at the manor in 1973, the Macmillan edition, the Bhagavad Gita had just come out, the first printing had just come out, just recently. And every day, Prabhupada stayed there for almost a month. And in the evening, that big, big sitting room, so many devotees would be in there, and Prabhupada would be preaching to guests. Shyama Sundar always brought so many famous guests in to come. And Prabhupada would speak, and they would always quote, you know, from Bhagavad Gita. like it or not, he'd look at me and say, find that verse. And I'd grab this Bhagavad Gita, because now this Bhagavad Gita had in the back all the verses in Sanskrit, the first and third lines of the verses. So he would say the verse, and he would say, find that verse. So he wanted me to show, by opening this Bhagavad Gita, and that whatever he was saying was from Shastra. It was from the law books. That's what he said. These are law books. He said, he said so many times, like when we speak, we don't just speak, you know, from some sentimental platform. I think this, I think that, perhaps, maybe. He said, we're speaking from Shastra, from these law books. He said that at that time. Every day he was saying that. Every day we'd sit there and find that verse, and I'd be petrified. You know, it could be the easiest verse. And I said, what's that again? And he'd say it again. You know, he'd say whatever. He'd say it. So I just had to try to catch that first letter so then I could look it up alphabetically. And then I'd find it. And he'd say, go on, read. You can hear if you listen to some of these conversations. You'll hear this foolish guy trying to read, you know, and trying to pronounce Sanskrit. And Prabhupada was happy and he was proud that even this fool doesn't know anything. That's what it was like. I felt like that, you know. Prabhupada was showing it. Even this young kid doesn't know anything about Sanskrit. He can find this because this Bhagavad Gita is like that. It's been set up in this way. And this is law books. We don't speak nonsense. We speak Krishna's saying. We speak what the pure devotee is saying. So he said, these are our law books. It was at that time he said, everybody says it's 10,000 years. The Prabhupada said, these books, they're there. And for 10,000 years, we use these books. So very wonderful what Prabhupada's given us. But he made that point, especially during this time. It was like, it just happened, and he wanted to show us how to use these books, you know, how to use his Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. So very special. So he was training us in this. Not that we just talk anything we want, speculate, no speculation. He told us. Yeah. All right.
I have to say, one of my nice favorite experiences, I also had a chance to talk with Prabhupada and Sri Kirti in an airplane. Now, this was on the way to Mexico City. And, me to be traveling with Sri Prabhupada, it was like too much, more than I could dream of. Prabhupada sat by the window, and I went myself behind Prabhupada by the window, all kinds of light. I could see Prabhupada's head right in front of me, it was so excited. As soon as the plane takes off, sure enough, sort of he takes off Prabhupada's Prasadam. He sat in, what I can remember, I mean, it was the chorus, it was because we were coming from Los Angeles. So, Prabhupada had some chorus and a few other things. And of course, afterwards, the Maha. And after we're all finished taking prasadam, a young lady comes down the alley, Stuart did the same thing. She didn't grab the forehead or something. She just came to the front of the Prabhupada and she said, "Can I get you anything?" And Prabhupada looked at her and she said, "He says, yes, bring 7 ups for everybody." Of course, for us, in those days, we were not drinking sodas. At least for me, he was my ass. And Prabhupada said, "Yes, bring 7 ups for everybody." Wow! We're bringing a 7 up, Srila Prabhupada. After that, when everybody heard about this story, some people say that in New York they used to buy crates at 7 ups. Everybody went crazy, there was 7 ups. And Gurudas tells me that Prabhupada is sometimes called it 7 o'clock.
7 o'clock.
Give me 7 o'clock. That was the work of Prabhupada. For 7 ups. Prabhupada said it was still suggested.
It's funny, the first time he had it, and it was on the arrival to New York. Long story, which I'm not going to tell now, but so then in New York, I told the devotee, said, "Do you need anything for Prabhupada?" I said, "Yeah, get a 6-pack of 7-Up," and they were like, "Huh?" I said, "Just do it. Get a 6-pack of 7-Up." Anyway, that was in July, and within a week, like 7-Up had gone all over the society, you know. And by the time we got to L.A. a week later, and it was, like you said, it was in the refrigerators, in every refrigerator across the street. Everybody had 7-Up because we didn't do anything. We didn't take anything like that. We had drank water, you know, or made fresh juices. That was it. So this was like, and I say it's funny because, you know, Prabhupada had a 7-Up, and everyone was drinking 7-Up. I say, but Prabhupada got up every morning at 1 o'clock, but no one got up at 1 o'clock, you know. So he realized that, you know, that he couldn't do, you know, he couldn't do certain things. And he had it on occasion. That was one. On the planes, that's when he would have it. You know, it was a 7-Up. He'd have a 7-Up. But otherwise, so by the time we got to Los Angeles here, it was just days later. You know, it was a week later. And we're up, as soon as we got there, like, Kurunder comes up. It was like one of the first things. He said, Prabhupada, everyone's drinking 7-Up. And Prabhupada said, no, that's not good. He said, I drink it sometimes for digestion. He said, but otherwise, he said, it's not something we should do, you know. Yeah. Yes. Yes, there's some interesting things. Should we stop here? It's getting a little late. I think we need to stop. I'd like to. Everyone's questions answered? Yes, one more and go ahead. Here? Oh, here was Venice Beach. It was the only. He went to Venice Beach and Chevet Hills Park. But he favored the beach. But sometimes it could be very windy and cold on the beach. So, you know. And raining, you walk in the rain, you know, we walk in, you know, remember many umbrella morning walks. Never missed a morning walk. Even in a blizzard, he took a morning walk in Switzerland, inside the building. But he still took his morning walk. It was like, you know, he was so, that was also nice story. But I think we'll stop here tonight, and I give class tomorrow morning, I heard. So Bhagavatam class, and I could probably tell you mostly it'll be Prabhupada's story. So if you want to be here tomorrow morning, if you can, I would love to see you all. And can take advantage. These days are very special, and these appearance, disappearance, festival days. We can, of course, during Kartik. So it's a very special time to engage in some service. And this is also service. Krishna becomes very, very happy, very pleased, more pleased when he hears the glorification of his pure devotees. Even in his own glorification, he's more happy when he hears the pure devotee being glorified. So we all benefit very much. I know myself, it's what always pushes me up here to do it is my own selfishness, that I need all the help I can get, and Prabhupada's very kind and merciful. He's giving me this service, and so all of you, very fortunate to be here, and just continue in this way, and at the end of life, you can remember Prabhupada, go back home, back to Godhead, you can remember Krishna, remember Prabhupada, stay engaged in service, and Prabhupada said everything will be all right. So thank you very, very much for being here. Jai.
On memories, uh-huh. You're a lot younger.
Yeah, it's about 40 years ago, yeah.
Because I just started watching them, and now I see them in person.
Thank you. You did a good job. First class. Thank you. Yes.
Are we allowed to touch our heads to each other? Is that
you weren't here?
But have you been to Moscow with Prabhupada on the street or no?
No, I've been to Moscow. I'm at the temple.
I mean, with Prabhupada.
With Prabhupada, no. No, Shama Sundar was there, yeah.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. How do you do?